Welcome to The Thriving Marriage, the podcast for those who want to get their spouse back in love with them and truly thrive.
You'll learn why 95% of people don't save their marriage and the secret method no one else is talking about that will change everything for you. Are you ready?
Are you ready?
Let's turn tragedy to triumph.
Here are your hosts, international marriage experts, Mark Johnston and Heather Choate.
Welcome everyone here to the Thriving Marriage Podcast. We're excited and grateful to have you guys here today. I'm Heather Choate. I'm with Mark Johnston. How are you doing, Mark?
I'm doing wonderful. How about yourself?
So good. Yeah, so many amazing things happening. But today, my friends, we're going to be talking about how to stop the deterioration and create some bonding. So if you feel like things are deteriorating in your marriage, this is going to be for you, and make sure you stay to the end, because at the end is how we're really going to reveal how to turn things around so you can create that bonding you're looking for. Before we get to that, though, we're going to share our client win of the week. Mark, you want to share this one?
Yeah. This past client says, biggest win yet. After 2 months and was doing everything wrong until I started the program and changed my whole outlook in stubborn ways. It was heartbreaking to hear she was moving into her own townhouse last week, but it simply turned to missing me and she reached out. We talked here and there, but yesterday she called me out of the blue and we had a great talk. Even better today. And tonight she dropped more hints than a little that she wants to get back together. I'm trying to think, like, there wasn't a name listed on this one. And I assume that, you know, that's on purpose. But I was like, oh, I actually have a couple clients in a very similar situation. I was like, I wonder who posted this.
Yeah.
Because this isn't uncommon for these things to happen.
Yeah. I love his humility and saying, like, I was doing everything wrong. My whole outlook changed, my stubborn ways. And so this is what we're talking about when we're helping you guys to get your spouse to hit that pause button and to start to do some new things in some new ways. So you start to get some new results. And it can happen very quickly when you actually learn what really works. And so today we're going to share a little bit about that. We asked you guys over in the Facebook group, our Thriving Marriage Facebook group, plug for that. If you're not a member, go ahead and join. It's an amazing group. I believe we have like 45,000 members now, or 40,000, something like that. It's amazing. But we asked you guys, how do you bond with your spouse? A lot of the replies that I saw there were a bunch of question marks. Someone even said, what spouse? Which I thought was kind of funny. Some of you are saying that you like talking about different love languages, time together, or cuddling, or talking, different things like that. So you talked about some of the bigger things, some of the little things. And I think that that's a beautiful thing, that we are seeing that there are some little things that create bonding. And we're also seeing some bigger things that create bonding. Mark, it's usually the culmination of lots of the little things that create closeness, intimacy, bonding. And it's also the culmination of lots of little things that create this deterioration as well. It usually isn't just one huge, boom, monumental thing that just kind of came out of nowhere. Now, a lot of you might be saying, Heather, I felt blindsided. I had no idea this was going on. I had no idea they felt this way. But when you examine why your partner maybe did the thing that surprised you, the underlying reasons are rarely a surprise. It's usually built on a lot of years of different habits, a lot of years of different ways of engaging together that have led to this. So what are we discussing here today when we're talking about the deterioration of a relationship, Mark, and how to create better bonding so that people listening can come away with some actual action steps to build and create better bonding?
So I know, we got to acknowledge that a good chunk of our audience is here because they're trying to make things better in their relationship. I think there's also a decent number of people, like I see in the comments, that there's a lot of people that have good relationships. They're just trying to maintain it. So what we're trying to talk about today is not getting up to that bonding stage, because most of you are probably have gone through that process. You've worked out the dating and you've worked out the situation where you were or are a really good couple at some point. We're talking about that latter half where things start to decline and why it starts to decline and how do we kind of come back up from that. So I know basically what I'm saying here is we want to help you to understand what's driving this pulling away, if that's what you're seeing, or how to prevent it, or even how to reverse it. So I want to begin with a discussion of Knapp's relationship model. If you guys were paying attention last week, I actually brought this up the other week, and I'm going to just pull up an image of this and just to kind of show you where what we're talking about, if Zoom will let me.
So last week we were talking about those five different things that create a fulfilling relationship. And so really encourage you that if you haven't listened to that and how to know if a marriage is over or not, then go ahead and listen to that episode. But we're going to share with you guys this again. Now, if you're watching on YouTube or Facebook, the replay here, and you can see this visually, that's awesome. If you're listening on iTunes or Spotify, sorry, you're not going to get the visual, but you can go ahead and look up this graphic if you want. It's called Knapp's relationship model, Knapp spelled K-N-A-P-P-S. And we'll try to put it in the show notes too, if we can get a link to this. It's not our content. This is something that we are borrowing from Knapp's relationship model. And Mark's got it here on the screen.
So this is a theory that's fairly well known within relationship development research. I was actually looking through several scientific studies earlier this week, and several of them actually referenced this one in particular. So it's fairly well known. So, I mean, you could probably go out and just Google the name. When I did, I happened to see a whole bunch of images on this. This just happened to be the prettiest one. We're using this one today. But the whole point here is the theory behind this is to say, hey, there are different stages as relationships come together and as relationships come apart. Heather and I are adding into this theory and saying, okay, you know, what happens at each of these stages and how do you prevent it from dissolving or, you know, coming apart? And how do you come back up these steps once it has come apart? But you can see here, like, there are distinct areas. Now, I mean, I could go on and on about just lots of different theories here. I mean, this is one way to look at relationships. I know, you know, some other theories that I was even contemplating discussing today was like, there's one talking about key moments within a relationship. There's all sorts of theories, but I think all of these, the only reason why I like looking at things like this is because I noticed that when we look at several different theories and we find overlapping information, we can say, okay, here's some truth to this. And what Heather and I wanted to do was distill some of this truth and help you to understand this situation of coming apart and coming back together. So I'm going to shut that down for a second here. You know, just mostly because it's great to look at it and it's great to see it, but you know, I also it's good to be able to see each other. Heather and I are seeing each other on the on the screen as well. So basically, what we're going to do is we're going to run through some of these stages, and then we're going to talk a little bit about what creates these situations, what reverses it. So let's start at the top there, that differentiation stage. So in this theoretical model, this is still not like an unhealthy stage. If we went back to that image, it says this is a stage where you start to express beliefs or do activities that aren't shared with your partner. And if you went further into the material, you'd see that there's other descriptions saying that this is where you start seeing yourself as more individual with your own pursuits, your own interests, and your own roles, which is, that's fine. That's normal, right, Heather? Yeah. Like I said, it can still be a healthy stage if it's navigated well. And I generally find like these points right here, this is, if you go like back in time, if your marriage is starting to come apart, there's probably like a point back in time where you could pinpoint this differentiation that did not go super well. Maybe it wasn't discussed. Like maybe there are some needs that needed to change that weren't discussed, or maybe it was like an entirely new set of beliefs or new interests that popped up that weren't really supported. But this is kind of this key point of, if you handle this well, it tends to prevent a lot of other problems. I don't know, Heather, you've probably seen this within your own marriage. How do you handle these sort of situations?
Yeah, this is a good one. So this was a bit of a tripping point for me. I felt like to have a happy marriage, you needed to be liking all the same things all the time. Yeah. I don't know why I believed that. I just thought, oh, your partner will be like your best friend in everything. And that caused some unhappiness, right? Of course, because that's not true. It's actually not a healthy relationship for you guys to both like everything and to do everything together. And at times Ben's hobbies or interests would feel threatening to me because I was like, wait, no, we're supposed to do everything together. So that was my own journey as my younger married self and learning to embrace Ben for who he is and also giving myself some freedom to, quote unquote, find myself. Like, we hear this, like, I need to find myself. Mm-hmm. But sometimes when we've lost our identity in another person and we think that we're just supposed to be like completely one unit in every sense of the word, or you completely lost yourself in your identity as a mother or in your identity at work, you need to learn who you really are. And so that was a journey for me, to see myself as an individual and that I have my own pursuits, my own interests. I have my own roles and Ben has those too. This goes really well and very healthy and a very beautiful, variety and spice to the marriage to bring some differentiation between us when we are also invested and prioritizing meeting each other's needs and giving a lot of feedback, right? Giving and receiving the feedback that we talk so much about here. And if most of you are here, you're like, that does not go well in my house. You're not alone because most people are not taught how to do that. So when Ben and I have not had as good of skills, did not know how to communicate well, did not know how to meet each other's needs, these things can very much start to pull us apart and start to get us down to the next level of deterioration there that we'll talk about next. But when we do have good feedback, when we are able to meet each other's needs and accommodate each other and understand each other, then it's actually a really beautiful thing. It brings strength to the relationship. What would you say, Mark?
Well, I think a good example of this is I'm thinking of my late older brother. His was the marriage that I actually, when I was growing up, often looked up to simply, there's a big age difference. Like there is a 14-year age difference between us. I'm one of the younger kids and he's the oldest. So I was able to kind of look on his relationship with his wife, my sister-in-law. And I had some time to reflect on some of these things when he passed away last year. Talking with his wife and with his kids. And I recall a situation that was a number of years back. It was probably like 15 plus years ago when he and his wife were starting to have a lot of arguments around their faith. They'd both grown up within the same church and she became a little bit dissatisfied within the culture of the church that they grew up with. And I remember talking to him about this at some point. And he told me that he had to make this, he had to create room in his life for his wife and her choices. She began to differentiate here. And he said he had to make a choice between whether, her and his family was more important or whether staying really active and within his religious life was important. And, he ended up choosing his wife and his family because he saw that that was going to pull them apart. Now, I'm not going to say everything is quite so serious as that sort of situation, but it was a good example of a point where there was differentiation. And there was a lot of discussion and some choices about how to accommodate these new needs that came up.
Mm. Awesome. So as you guys are listening to this, leave a comment, let us know what kind of differentiation, I know that's kind of a we're using a word here, a big label, have you experienced in your relationship, maybe where you started to see yourself as more of an individual or your spouse did, pursuing their own interests, their own roles, maybe changing or evolving in their value and belief system even. We see that happen a lot. You hear about midlife crisis. You hear about like leaving the faith that you were raised in. We hear about, you know, taking on alcoholism or falling into depression. There's a lot of these things that happen. So it may not even be like an active pursuit, but that maybe your interests are changing, or maybe there are just biological changes happening. And we start to see each other as more individual and having different roles. So when this is navigated well, it's can be healthy and good. But what happens when it's not navigated well is that we go to circumscribing.
Yes.
And circumscribing describes a situation where differentiation did not go well, thus resulting in a desire to engage less with your partner on those controversial topics. Mm-hmm. So here's where you had the situation and it didn't go very well. So an example here. So maybe if life changes, sorry, let me read that one again.
I can describe it and perhaps.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
Well, if there's some big life changes that are going on and it results in someone wanting to change their role. Like I think a common one is as kids get older and perhaps you have a homemaker within the home. I have another brother who his kids are getting old. He was the homemaker and his kids are getting older. And there's a lot of tension as he is shifting into more of a working role again. Not always the typical, but you know, I see that same thing mirrored elsewhere. And that's the thing here is these big life changes create some differences in expectations and it can create a lot of tension. And when you stop or when you start like trying to avoid those topics because there's a lot of tension, this is what circumscribing is describing here. It's this inability to share really personal or sensitive information or to be able to see eye to eye when once you have started to differentiate. Yes.
Yeah. So it's really, you know, you can navigate this healthfully when you're able to share personal sensitive information. You're able to create some intimacy and it's not like this taboo subject, but it really doesn't go well because there's an inability to share personal sensitive information. And so you don't feel safe to open up about that. And it creates more of this deterioration in the relationship.
Yeah, I mean, you can start to see how it's starting to progress. So you have this difference of ideas and now you're not able to talk about it quite as much because it's created a lot of fights and tensions and arguments, or you're not feeling heard and you're not feeling like your partner understands. So you're just going to not talk about those things. So you're going to focus on the nice stuff instead and the things where you can bond. And this is area where you start pulling apart and you have to kind of pick and choose what you can share with your partner. Now, if that even further pulling apart doesn't go well, let's say, you know, the homemaker is starting to work and the other partners, you know, getting upset that, you know, this person is entering the workforce, you're creating all this tension here. You're going to probably move into this stagnation stage next.
Yeah. And this is what we hear when we talk about roommate load, or you've just kind of lost the passion. I love you, but I'm not in love with you. Right. So it gets to the point where there's really no depth of conversation that's happening. And there may be even very real discomfort in discussing anything of actual substance. So sometimes you'll just become like going through the motions, right? Or talking about surface level things. So further decline happens at this stage if there is either ongoing conflict, shutting down, or avoidance of problematic areas of the relationship. And so here's where we hit this stagnation. I mean, the word itself, you can just kind of like feel how it is. And I felt it in my marriage where we just kind of like, we're just kind of in roommate mode. We're just going through the motions. The closeness, the intimacy, the passion is not very high right now. And we're just kind of sitting here because there's underlying tension and we're not resolving it. We're not resolving it in a healthy way. Maybe we're not even talking about it at all. That's not a fun place to be.
Yeah, I would say that this stage is where it really starts becoming a crisis, where there really needs to be something done to address the discomfort, you know, whatever reason why you're not able to have these more in-depth conversations. And otherwise, you're going to get into these phases where someone's going to do something about it. Mm-hmm. People don't like sitting here for a whole long time. It's not like this area that's very fun or comfortable. So, you know, either it gets resolved and gets better, or, you know, it's just going to sit there stagnating and it's going to get kind of fester to the point where we go into this next stage of avoiding or avoidance. I mean, this is really where we start to get into actual separation, where you're creating physical distance. You might be ignoring a partner. You might be engaging in very minimal communication or conversation. You're just getting you're having that business sort of communication at this stage is what I really see this as. I don't know. What do you see with this stage, Heather?
Yeah, it's a lot of, you know, not being able to talk to each other, sometimes stonewalling or shutting out. Sometimes they may have put up specific boundaries about what you can and cannot talk about. We talk to a lot of people every single week. You know, I'm talking to dozens of you guys over in the Thriving Marriage Facebook group and in masterclasses and on YouTube. And I hear a lot of times that we can talk about surface level things, but as soon as I bring up the relationship, they put a boundary there. They are not going to talk about it, right? And almost always this amount of distance is because there is active pain when interacting. It has no longer become rewarding to interact together. And so there's very little of that happening anymore. And it's very painful. And there's usually a lot of tension. Sometimes there's just this impasse, right? An ability for basic needs to be met, even on a very low level. So the reward factor for engaging at this point is very, very low. And at this point, it often is where we start to introduce, I could be happier somewhere else. I could be happier with someone else. This is no longer rewarding to me. And we talk about the intimacy cycle, right? So this is the intimacy cycle going in the wrong direction, right? Where needs haven't been met. So I'm no longer willing to meet your needs. And then because you don't feel like I met your needs, now I'm not willing to meet your needs. And deeper into this we go. So it leads to more and more decline of the relationship because it's just no longer a rewarding situation.
I like what you said there. It's they've created this separation here. And now that they're apart, they're like, okay, you know, you usually go a couple different directions. You know, we just saw from the example earlier, they were starting to resolve some of their issues. So some avoidance actually resulted in, you know, his wife actually missing him. But that's because a lot was done before all the separation was going. But, you know, if things are really on the down, on the decline here, usually what happens is with that separation, they're like, okay, here's some relief. Here's some room here for me to meet my needs in other areas. And so they start looking for solutions outside of the relationship. And this is usually when we get to this termination stage of the relationship. And this is just the end. If you've reached this, then, you know, your partner has, if we're going through all the stages, has wanted something different. They found out they can't share those needs with you without there being some tension and conflict, has come to the conclusion that it's better to avoid communication around these needs, and then has found that staying away has become more rewarding, or it's easier to meet these needs than within the relationship. And so this is kind of the culmination of that arc there.
Yeah. So as you have been listening to this, what stage do you guys think that you're at? Let us know in the comments and we can coach you on what to do. Do you feel like you're in the very beginning of differentiation, circumscribing, stagnation, avoiding, or terminating? Now, most of you are going to say terminating, but you're not quite there yet unless the deal is done. Okay. Unless the divorce is finalized, and sometimes not even then, because we do see some people that are fully divorced get back together. But let us know which one you are at so we can coach you on how to improve. Now we're going to share with you guys, what do we do with this? How do we try to reverse the decline and create some bonding? Oh, but you, Mark, but that was really depressing.
it's you know, we're trying to have this like nice discussion about relationships in here. We're talking about how they come apart, but I think it's necessary sometimes to have that understanding of like what actually went into some of these problems and how did you arrive at this point.
Right. It is good to have that awareness. And this is kind of how Mark and I, as coaches and the coaches that we train, look at a relationship. We look for certain milestones or markers to identify where it is at. And like our question that we asked in the podcast last week, how do you know if it's too far gone? Well, we look at some of these things to determine what stage you are at. And then if you're hitting the milestones of things reversing from the decline and moving towards bonding and moving towards a healthy functional relationship. And so like our client shared the win that he felt like he was doing everything wrong and that she wouldn't like even talk to him. And then he finally was able to have her want to talk to him again. So we look at that as one of these milestones that things are heading in the right direction. So let's start from the bottom. Let's start from the deepest, darkest hole. That's not super fun to talk about, but this is what we do every day. We're in it with you guys as the ICU here. Let's talk about how to reverse the decline if you're in termination. Is it even possible? It feels kind of like resurrecting the dead. Is it possible, Mark? How do we come up from here?
Yeah, I do think it's possible. And I'm thinking about like, what created these situations and how do you come back? So like, as an example, you know, we're trying to go from this termination phase to this, as odd as it sounds, we want to get to this avoidance phase.
Yeah.
and I'm thinking like, well, you know, what caused people to go to that termination phase and how do we reverse it? And it's a lot about I think there is some amount of how willing your partner is to maintain any kind of relationship with you. That's really important. And if that's a really hard point here, you need to find some way to do that. And this is why, why often you and I are talking about finding some common goals or finding some like bare minimum that is acceptable within the relationship. Sometimes we call it an acceptable arena. And we say, okay, everything is kind of falling apart, but we're going to have this space right here where we can talk about making our relationship better as co-parents.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're trying to get to this point where they're not saying, okay, I can't have anything to do with you. And instead they're saying, okay, I'm going to have some boundaries here and I'm going to have some space. But there might be some ignoring here, but I do have some space here for the relationship. That's what we're trying to aim for. So, you know, we do need to kind of have some of that, some willingness to maintain any type of relationship and some desire to make that pocket there that you have better. I mean, what do you think, Heather? You know, given that stance that we're taking, we've talked about trying to ask for reconciliation at different stages. And where does that fit in with this?
I was just thinking about that one of the biggest mistakes. So this is the bottom of the totem pole, right? So often we hear from you guys, you want to jump from the bottom to the top. And I get that. We all want instant gratification, but it does not work. So the bottom line is that your focus should not be on a full reconciliation of the marriage right now. It will backfire. It will push your spouse further away if you're simply pushing them to try to get back together. So what we do that's radically different than how most people think in this situation is help you create those common goals, help you create that arena that is acceptable to everyone. And so your main focus needs to be on resolving some of these smaller issues first, making small bids for connection or small bids for commitment. And that allows, once you navigate that well, for more comfortable interactions as you are able to increase. So there isn't a need to maintain distance anymore. So that can be really challenging for most people to see, to wrap their minds around, and to identify what kind of common goals could I even have with my spouse at this point. So if you guys want help with that, leave a comment, say me, And we will show you exactly what kind of common goals you can set with your spouse right now that is actually going to help get you in the right momentum. It's a little bit like we need to go slow to go fast, because you trying to go fast right now is not going to work. You're going to be spinning your wheels. We got to get some like traction underneath your tires by doing some of these smaller steps that are going to get you into momentum to then increase the opportunity for more connection. Which brings us then to the next level, which is avoiding. So Mark, how do we increase some connection and reverse the decline if we are in an avoiding stage?
It sounds kind of funny to me, like to say we're leveling up into this avoidance stage. I mean, that's like
you went from terminal cancer to stage two. Yeah,
exactly. Well, the whole point here is, you know, the way I'm seeing it is if you're going from this termination to avoiding stage, you're going from this point where you're saying, I'm done, I want nothing to do with you, to saying, okay, I can interact with you, I can, but I'm still going to have a lot of distance and a lot of separation here. And why this is important to kind of point this out is because there's a reason for that. There's some sort of there's a need for this barrier, these boundaries to, and it's usually, you know, like to protect oneself. It's why these boundaries are up. And so the solution is we need to stop this bleeding, these active problems. You really need to look at this and say, okay, well, what's created this toxicity within your relationship that necessitates your partner staying away? Is there something that your partner can't tolerate anymore? Because you really need to figure out what is causing your relationship to bleed. You can say, okay, we're fine here. But if all this other stuff, like just being able to be in the same house comfortably, to spend some casual time together, it's not working. And it's because general interactions are painful. I do think that at this stage, I don't know what you think here, Heather, but I do think at this stage, you still need to emphasize healthy interactions instead of reconciliation. It's still way too distant, I think, of a goal to focus on making the relationship work or something like that.
Agreed. So just as a little bit of perspective, it's identifying what's causing the bleeding, but it's not necessarily like solving the deep issues causing the bleeding. It's more like, let's reduce the tension mm-hmm. around what's creating the bleeding situation, and let's stop the bleeding from happening anymore. So let's identify what that is, so there's no more damage being done, and we're going to reduce the tension. How are we going to reduce the tension, right? So the main goal is to open up conversation so that there isn't a need to avoid communication. So here, if you follow kind of our path process, we help your spouse hit the pause button so they're not pulling away anymore. And then after they hit the pause button, you want to get some more communication open. You want your spouse to feel safe enough to open up about some things and to increase some communication about some things. Hint, those some things are not going to be getting back together with you right now. Those are not the some things that they're going to be open to. I can promise you that, because we've helped tens of thousands of couples, right? So some questions to ask: why, you know, does your partner need you to listen more, right? Is that why they're feeling like they don't want to talk? Are they needing more of a listening ear? Do you need to show them maybe some greater respect? Maybe there's been a lot of volatility, name calling, lying, manipulation. Maybe some of those things have, you know, caused them to feel very disrespected in this situation. So you bringing in a greater level of respect is going to stop that bleeding and increase the opportunity to communicate. Maybe you need to be a little more flexible. Have you been super rigid and you're like, I'm not going to give on this thing? We see that happen a lot, Mark, right? Where it feels like you against them and you're going to stake your ground and they're going to stake their ground. Maybe you need to be a little more flexible, a little more understanding. Maybe you've been a little too flexible. Maybe you need to actually have some better boundaries. So it's going to be a case by case situation. And that's why we can help you navigate how to identify what's causing the bleeding and what's needed to heal that, so it's not bleeding anymore and you guys are able to feel safer.
Yeah, I'm thinking here, the way we're wording this, it almost sounds like we're implying that it's automatically your fault. I don't want to imply this, that like, okay, it's because you need to listen more, or you need to have some better respect, or you need to be more flexible. And sometimes, I mean, this is about accountability or boundaries or other things. And I do think that it's really important to get some outside perspective on these sort of cases and how to approach it if like there is some really tough resistance from your partner on this. But I do think a lot of this, it means, you know, opening up, beginning to have some healthy conversation, especially around those ongoing disagreements that keep happening over and over and over again. That's really kind of like the milestone. If you're coming out of this, it's like, can we have some healthy conversation about these bigger ongoing issues that keep happening?
Yeah. And it's going to be a process. So thank you for pointing that out. I'm in no way meant to say this is your fault and you need to fix it. What I am saying is let's take some positive action and the things that we can control, right? And the things that we can take accountability for ourselves. And that's going to have a huge effect on our partner. And we may need to have our partner come into some accountability too with some healthy boundaries. And so this is the stage where we're going to navigate that. And we're going to do it in a way that isn't going to backfire and push them further away, which is what most people end up doing. That brings us to stagnation. All right, Mark, what's going on here with stagnation? How do we create some better bonding? Go up the scale here.
Once again, you know, it still feels weird to say we're leveling up and we're still at like this stagnation. But it is much better than active avoidance. We'll say that. I mean, once again, the whole reason why someone might be at this stagnation stage is because this small bit of circumscribing that was happening previous to that wasn't enough. So they were avoiding some of these harsher topics and it was just creating more problems. And so then, you know, you just stopped talking altogether. Meaning to come out of stagnation, I do think that you need to make deep and personal sharing much more meaningful and much more rewarding. So this is the stage where instead of like, you know, just getting rid of problems or just making sure that you can be in the same room without it being uncomfortable, where you're actually starting to open up quite a bit more and you're starting to build up a little bit of trust with some of your emotions again. It is the kind of the goal of coming out of this stage, in my opinion. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, it's really that idea of like, I can share here and it's rewarded. And when my partner shares, it's rewarded. What comes to my mind with this is a lot of those home messages that here we're starting to help our spouse and ourselves let go of the old story about the relationship and making it safe to share and to bring in a lot of perspective on what our spouse is going through. And it may mean that we have to sit through and even empathize with some really difficult emotions. Yes. Here's where we start to really do that underlying healing that we said, it's not the time in the first two stages. It's going to backfire if you try to push for it too soon. But here's where we start to get to the place where we can sit with some of this and understand our partner's perspective, which is our P in the PATH method, is really understanding their perspective. As you understand their perspective, it's going to create even more openness to discuss some of the problems. And if you're not familiar with a home message, go back and listen to some of our other podcasts or become a client because we'll help you with that. But that's the reiteration of, I feel safe with you. I like being with you. I enjoy spending time with you. I treat you with respect. You are meaningful to me. So it's taking whatever your partner said was the reason why they wanted out, their story about you. Maybe it's, you don't listen, you don't care, I can't trust you, you don't respect me. And now we're going to be understanding their perspective, why they created that story, and then reiterating and telling a new story so that then we can heal some of these underlying issues that have caused the relationship to deteriorate to this point.
I think I think a really big piece here in what, because I see this as, there's a lot of need to build up trust at this stage. Mm. And I'm thinking, okay, what's building up trust? It's a lot about taking the sharing and making it safe and acceptable and rewarding. And I think a really important piece here with this stage is figuring out new ground rules around these interactions and around this communication to give some structure or safety to these interactions. And occasionally, like my wife, Jen, and I have to revisit some of these ground rules ourselves here and there and be like, okay, look, I'm going to spell this out. And in this situation, if I'm telling you about something important, I'm going to tell you it's important. And if I'm saying that, then I need you to sit and listen to me for a moment. And what I'm getting at here is sometimes Jen and I have to kind of spell out some of these rules or some of these expectations in order for things to go a little bit more smoothly so that more openness can happen.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm saying is, like, I think that's a key part of trying to move beyond this stagnation.
Yeah. Agreed. One of the ground rules that Ben and I had to lay down because circumscribing didn't go well was that, and I've said it before on the podcast here, but I'll ask Ben, when in the next 24 hours can we talk about this? That's a ground rule. You want to avoid it. I want to pursue it right now. I want to blow it up. I want to make it happen. I want to resolve it, not blow it up like bad, but you know, I want to like get it out. And so we had to create a ground rule of like, okay, how are we going to interact here? How are we going to be able to share and sit with some difficult emotions that aren't really fun and try to understand each other's perspective? And so I'm sure that will evolve in time too. And, you know, we may have a new ground rule at some time, or that may no longer be necessary and we'll evolve into something else. This is where a lot of people get stuck though, I think, in this friend stage. So if we're looking at stagnation as roommate mode, and I love you, but I'm not in love with you, a lot of the passion and the romance has been lost. This is where a lot of people can get stuck there. And we even see sometimes that you're able to talk about things. In fact, you may be able to talk about anything and you could feel like you're really great friends. And sometimes your partner's still holding on to that. Well, I'm glad that we're friends. I still don't want to be, I'm still not in love with you. And if there's no love, there's no passion, then I don't want that. And so it's really that they're holding on to some of that old story or old belief about you. And there's a little bit more that needs to be done here to understand their perspective, to find out what's wanted and needed here, and then to provide that and create some new ground rules. Some common goals, even, is another way we talk about it, right? We talked about common goals earlier. Here's where your common goals become a little more intimate, and a little bit more of the deeper stuff going on that's really going to help create some bonding and some closeness between you. And that's going to bring us to circumscribing. So coming out of circumscribing means solving the problem that led you there in the first place. And what it means is that the differences, the personal interests, maybe the change in your beliefs or your values, they need to be embraced, celebrated, or at least respected and made room for. Mm-hmm. In order to come out of this, you and your partner need to believe that the differences you might have actually make your relationship unique, maybe even special, maybe even more beautiful, and that your differences actually can create something positive. So we see this a lot with, again, that midlife crisis kind of thing. I need to find myself. I'm changing who I am. I'm re-identifying myself, and having that be something that is a good thing in your relationship, and that there's space and room for both of you to express yourselves as individuals within your unit together as a couple. Mark, what do you think?
Yeah, I would say even at this point, this is like where I see, as couples are coming from like that avoidance or that even that termination phase up to this point, it's where they start considering being a couple again. It's in the back of their mind, and I can see that there can be discussions at this point of reconciliation and being a couple, with the caveat here that there needs to be some discussion of how you're going to get there. This isn't the goal here. This is like, hey, I can now consider this as the goal and that we're moving towards this. But yeah, I like what you said there, that a lot of this is, you know, if we're coming out of this, we're trying to get away from circumscribing where we don't share things. It really needs to be those differences and the need to be rewarding to share. And it needs to be like this positive thing that, hey, we're different and I want to share this with you. And, you know, if you're able to get away from that, if you're able to get to that point where that's the case, where you're saying, you know, I love that my wife, my husband is, you know, different and I'm embracing that, you know, you're well on your way to things being better. And it's, you know, we could go into all the little minute details, but you're really going here from here to the point where you're now working on identifying as a couple again and solidifying that relationship.
Yes. And that is where we see that you can make some bids for commitment to discuss the possibility of being happy together. Yes. And they're actually going to want to talk about that now. They're actually going to want it. Friends, I talked to so many of you guys, and so many of you are so desperate to try to get your spouse back. And if you just got them back in this moment, is that actually what you want? You'd want them just to come back because you begged them, or you're pleading with them, or you were desperate, or you manipulated them, or you did some hokey thing to try to suddenly make everything come true for you? No, you don't actually want that, because it's not built on a solid foundation, right? So you want your spouse to want you, to want to be with you, to want to spend time with you, to see themselves happy with you. Just like when you guys were first falling in love and you decided to get married, you didn't pressure them or force them or beg them or manipulate them or demand that they do it. They wanted to do it. And that's what you guys want too. So I want you to pay attention that we went through what, 4 levels here? Yeah. Terminating, avoiding, stagnation. It wasn't until the 4th level that we're even talking about getting back together. Okay. If nothing else, just don't talk about it until you get to level 4. Okay. It's going to do you a world of justice. I promise you, it's going to be so much better. And so few people do that, which is why so few people save their marriage. And it's why so many of our clients do save their marriage. Not just that in and of itself, but it's the entire mentality behind it. It's let's solve problems in the right order so that this can actually work effectively and you're not pushing your spouse further away, sometimes even unintentionally. All right. That brings us to differentiation, which is the peak of the pyramid here. And at this stage, there's no need to come out of this stage. It's not a bad thing. Remember, differentiation should be embraced so that you guys can bond better. And bonding results from solving all the previous problems and identifying as a couple again. So I want you guys to know that it is possible and that it's never going to be completely perfect. If Ben and I just stayed at the top of the pyramid our whole lives, that would not be realistic. It would probably not be as interesting. And it's just not realistic. And so it's that I asked Ben about this actually last week, Mark, when you introduced it to me, because I'd never actually heard of it before. And I was like, where do you think we are? This is one of those like woman trap questions. He was like, you're baiting me. I know it. I was like, no, it's not a woman bait trap question. I promise. But where do you think we are? And he's like, yeah, we teeter. Like we go back and forth. Like we go down here and then we come back up and, you know, it's never this perfect line. But the beauty of a relationship is that we can learn skills that help us to be healthier and help us learn how to connect better, help us learn how to understand each other better. And we are learning them with you and you can learn them too. It is absolutely possible. So if you guys want more help with this, leave a comment, say me, and we will coach you on exactly how to get there. Now for our marriage myth buster, marriage should be fair. Marriage should always be fair.
I mean, it makes sense to a certain degree, right? I get the mentality behind it, but I want to say right off the bat that too much concern with fairness, I mean, there's a big problem there. It leads to scorekeeping and the deterioration of the relationship. That sounds odd to say right off the bat, like, no, things shouldn't be fair. And that's not what I'm saying. But part of it becomes this, I think obsession is too strong of a word, but maybe a focus on the fairness. I mean, how do you actually measure how fair a relationship is? And how do you keep track of all the small unseen things that happen within a relationship that benefits each person? Now, I could leave it at that. And I think that would be a bit negligent, because I do think that instead, I think that this statement is asking the wrong question. Like, because it's kind of this assumption that, okay, we just need to adjust things a bit. Like, if you do this for me, then the marriage will feel fair. And it's the wrong mentality here. So the question of how fair the relationship is the wrong question. And the real question is, why does it feel unfair? Much more important, because marriages are going to naturally go through periods where things are going to become unbalanced. I can remember, I'm not going to even pretend to be able to feel like, or to say that it was fair as my wife was giving birth to our children and having to go through experiences like that. Or, you know, there's periods where I was working on the business and I was working, 12 to 14 hour days most days of the week. And that probably wasn't a fair period. Circumstances change and solutions don't always really keep up well with these changing circumstances. But it doesn't mean that you have to simply be satisfied if you're in a marriage that feels unfair. Mm-hmm. It generally means that one partner or another is feeling a bit overwhelmed if there's concerns for fairness, or not feeling as though your needs are being met or fulfilled, or there's some desire for things to be different. And so, rather than discussing how fair the relationship is, which I think is just going to lead into fights, it's going to be dismissive of your partner's contributions. A better discussion is how things can shift to deal with the overwhelm or the unmet needs, which is a lot less contentious, a lot less blaming, and a lot more collaborative. Yes. So, I mean, I don't know if that it's busted, because yeah, things can be unfair and marriages should feel fair in that, both partners should be satisfied with the arrangements. But I think there's a much better way to deal with that sort of concern.
Some wisdom from my 9-year-old. She came up the stairs and said, "Mom, life is fair because for everyone it isn't fair. Therefore it's fair." I was like, great, put it on a quote. Life is fair because it's not fair to everyone. So it's fair in its unfairness. Mm-hmm. So speaking of how to deal with overwhelm and unmet needs, join us next week because we're going to share with you how to have needs met in your marriage. Thank you so much, Mark, for joining us. And we hope you have a thriving marriage.
See everyone.
Thanks for listening to The Thriving Marriage, your A to Z blueprint for not just surviving marriage, but thriving. Until next time, my friends, thrive on.